Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks Saturday, January 27th, 2018. This is episode 1457. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by TurboTax Live. New from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. It's Tech Guy time. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. You're getting the idea here. Smartphones, smartwatches, all of these pieces of our new digital lifestyle. 888-ASK-LEO is the number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Yeah, we also talk about security. Man, this is going back and forth. We've been talking for weeks now about this Intel flaw that they, you know, you're not really a good, you know, you're not a big deal in the security flaw universe unless you have a sexy name. A sexy name. This isn't that sexy a name. Spectre or Meltdown. Those are the two flaws. But they're serious, as we've been saying, because they affect pretty much every modern processor. Not just Intel, but AMD, even ARM processors. Intel started doing the thing that caused problems, speculative execution, back in 1995. So this has been a problem for 23 years now. But it was just discovered a few months ago. And Intel's been putting out a fix, except this week they announced, stop, no, don't do that fix anymore. It makes some machines get into boot loops, which is not a breakfast cereal, although be a good name for a breakfast cereal. If you had your boot loops this morning, they're talking about machines that start and restart and restart and restart. This would be fairly disastrous if you wanted to use a computing device and it wouldn't, you know, go past starting up and failing and starting up and failing. It's kind of bad news. Can't get out of bed. So Intel said, never mind that fix. Now, this probably means nothing you should do unless you have one of those machines. Then call your manufacturer and hope and pray they have a fix for that. Otherwise, if you didn't do any updates, well, yeah, maybe you're glad. Don't, you know, I don't have any advice now. There's no advice anymore. I don't know. To date, these exploits, they're not viruses, exploits have not been exploited. There have been no Spectre or Meltdown viruses or malware or anything out there. And maybe not. Maybe there won't ever be because it's hard to do. You have to be a pretty good little hacker, good at your work to get it done. So maybe the right advice at this point is don't do anything for a while and until you A, hear that there's a fix that's good that doesn't slow your machine down and doesn't make it reboot, or B, there's something out there, there's some malware. And so far, we haven't heard of any malware to date. So this is why this is a hard job making security recommendations. I don't know what to say. I have put my money where my mouth is. I've patched everything I could. And this has been up to recently always the recommendation, which is do every update that your manufacturer pushes out. If, you know, everything, especially those critical updates, everything Apple or Microsoft says to do, do it. And if you have a laptop, you may even get a firmware update from your manufacturer. I did on my Lenovo's. Do it. I mean, worst case, if it forces your machine to reboot over and over again, at least you have a pretty good case to go back to the company and say, hey, I did that thing you told me to do, and it didn't work so well. I can't use my machine, and I I have to guess, and I haven't heard, but I have to guess that they'll stand behind it, right? It's extremely confusing for people in the business, let alone for a normal human just trying to figure out what's the right thing to do. I guess I'm going to have to say, I don't know. I should take it back. I mean, I patched, but I survived. I don't know if you would, and I'd hate to be responsible if you didn't. What a mess. What a mess. Don't know what to say. Don't know what to say about this except do what your conscience dictates. I'm not responsible. We were talking, speaking of security, about this Russian antivirus company, Kaspersky Lab. Lots of people recommended it. It was always considered a good choice for an antivirus. Never one of my recommendations. In fact, my current recommendation is stay away from antiviruses. They can cause more problems than they solve, et cetera, et cetera. You've heard me say that. There was some concern over Kaspersky Labs because there was some thinking that maybe the Russian government had some involvement in it, that perhaps it could be used to spy on computers. The U.S. government instructed U.S. government agencies not to use it. Well, there's some new information. BuzzFeed News, in conjunction with a Russian news site, Meduza, says there was a battle for control of the company between Eugene Kaspersky and the founders of the company and Russian security services, and that the Russian security services won. And the explosive revelation, and again, consider the source, a Russian news agency. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they're trustworthy or not. I don't know anything. Again, this is getting to be same old song here at the show. Don't know anything, but I've recommended not using Kaspersky. I don't use any antivirus, but especially not Kaspersky. Why take a chance? Now, this article, which is explosive, says there is code in the Kaspersky antivirus that lets people from Kaspersky download information from any computer running it. Access it. Any information. This is something called the Kaspersky Security Network. And this is part of the antivirus that stays online, that checks for updates and stuff. This was launched in 2012. The Kaspersky Security Network, this is a quote from the story, allows Kaspersky software to examine any potentially threatening file on a user's computer and compare it with other cases across the network. That's a benign use. Previous antivirus software worked locally on computers. Maybe yours does too. Some are moving to a cloud solution. But this article asserts that moving to a cloud solution allowed the company to analyze and neutralize new viruses, but it also could be run manually from a remote location, meaning an employee of Kaspersky Lab can download any file from a computer on which Kaspersky's security network is installed without its owner's knowledge. A great tool for protecting you or for spying on you. Yikes. So that's the latest. From a Russian news source, I don't even know. Can you trust Meduza? I'm not familiar with it. Should you worry about this? Maybe, probably be prudent. I would say would be prudent not to put Kaspersky on anything you do. And really, my advice stands, and if you want to ask me about it, 8888-ASK-LEO, we could talk about it. Do not install an antivirus on your computer. Windows 8 and 10 have their own antivirus. We'll get to your phones in just a second. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll have more of your calls. Well, actually, your first calls of the day, right? 8888-ASK-LEO coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Can you hear them? The phones are ringing. And it's all thanks to the wonderful and talented Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Great. How are you?
I am very, very good.
Good.
I am ready to talk to all sorts of wonderful people. You've been answering the phones like crazy.
I have.
When you call 8888-ASK-LEO, you will reach this powerful person, Kim Schaffer.
The gatekeeper.
She has the power of life or death for your phone call, so be nice to her. And you don't, I'm curious, because I don't watch you work. You don't ever like go, oh, I don't want to talk to you, goodbye, and hang up on
you. I'm not that mean.
You're very nice.
There may be phone screeners out there that are like that.
I've heard of people doing that.
I'm not one of them. I might say your question is not pertinent.
Yeah, or you were just on in the last.
Leo is not a medical doctor. I think you have the wrong show.
That could happen. Although I'd be glad to help people with their medical problems.
I'm not really sure.
It'd be fun.
Sometime,
you know, they should get Dina Dell to do a computer show and I'll do a medical show. That'd be perfect.
It would be awesome.
As long as people didn't do what I say. So you do have some nice people.
I do. Like. In fact, Mark in South Carolina has a very interesting question about that home assistant that shall not be named.
She who shall not be named.
In regards to the game that we also can't say the name of, the big game that's happening next Sunday.
We are allowed to say Super Bowl. Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl.
Superb owl.
No, I think you can't use it like it. I couldn't say like win Super Bowl tickets today because that would be, you know, not a licensed use of the name. But I think as a press item,
I can't see why we can't.
We
say
can say anything.
The
we
Super
want.
Bowl's coming
this
up.
This is fair use, as they say.
Yes.
Well, let me see if I can help Mark with his superb owl question. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. I think I'll just call her, how about Amanda?
Amanda. Hey, Amanda. I know who you're talking about, the Amazon Echo.
Right, exactly.
I just put one in my car.
You know, and that actually answers a question, one of the questions, why it came up on a Ford commercial during...
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of cars are starting to use... Ford, it's funny because Ford had that Ford Sync for a long time. They were one of the first car companies to put voice in their car, and even they're using Amazon now.
Yeah, and that, the last I heard, I think I've seen on Twitter this morning, that I guess Amazon's actually got 60% of the smart speaker market or something like that.
Huge. Huge. So, but watch out because Google's coming on strong. I mean, I think this is I've been talking about this now for a couple of years. I think this is the next. You know, you're always looking. What's the next big thing in computing? I think talking to your house or your car, you know, just into space is going to be the next big thing. Already is for many of us. So, what can I do to help you?
Yeah, well, I kind of had an observation, and it kind of came up only because. It was triggering my Echo during the Philadelphia game last week. And I think it was while the twit was...
We were probably talking about it, right?
Oh, yeah, and I don't know. And that's the thing. I didn't actually catch it.
You know, I have a rule we try to enforce on all our broadcasts not to say the A word or the G word or the S word or the C word. And that's not what you're thinking. That's, you know, Microsoft, Apple, Google, and Amazon's voice services. Because I don't want to trigger them. But I noticed that sometimes ads will trigger it. Although, of late, Amazon's ads have not. And I think they're putting a secret tone or somehow modifying the command so that it doesn't trigger. But very famously, I mean, there's a famous Xbox ad that triggered Xbox and took over the... took over the stream. Some people watch their video on their Xbox. And then there have been Burger King actually. Was it Burger King? I think it was. Did an ad where they triggered Google.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And got a whole speech. Basically got the ad to come out of your Google Assistant. And they got in trouble for that one. Google was not happy about that. So, anyway, are you worried about this? Or?
Well, no. It's more of a... I guess a concern. I mean, I like the Echo. I'm not worried about what it's going to hear in my place or anything like that, you know. But it's just a thought that...
You're worried about privacy. You're worried about privacy, stray conversations being recorded, things like that.
Yeah, no. I mean, not with me, but I guess
There's two things to say. First, it doesn't send anything back to the home office until the trigger word is heard. That's why the trigger words are limited, right? And then as soon as it hears a trigger word, it records everything and sends that back to the home office. And in almost every case that I know of, I'm not sure about Microsoft, but certainly with Apple, Google, and Amazon, those recordings are saved. They are available. In fact, Amazon was subpoenaed in a murder case for any audio recordings it might have. Now, Amazon said, well, it's not going to be very useful unless somebody triggered it. But as you point out, sometimes it gets triggered by accident. There is something more nefarious that I should point out. Because of the laws that allow law enforcement to issue subpoenas for information with, and in some cases using something called a national security letter, if it's a deemed important for national security, they can block Amazon from saying anything about it. So it is certainly theoretically possible. I don't know if it's ever happened. We will never know. For, say, the CIA. Well, I guess it has to be the FBI, doesn't it? Because it's domestic. For the FBI to send a national security letter to Amazon and say, turn on, if you would, turn on Mark's Echo. We just would like to hear everything. And that's completely theoretically possible. You have a microphone in there. By the way, it's always been possible with your smartphone as well. So the thing is, with any of these, you might notice some data increases in data use. So it would be of limited use. But I wouldn't be surprised if law enforcement does this from time to time.
My thought isn't so much with law enforcement as is it's more of a collective. For instance, say like next week you have the Super Bowl, and they trigger everyone's. Now, not all the commercials are the same, I guess.
Yeah, but
localities and
say,
stuff like
say
that.
Say a national commercial triggered this device,
right?
And you're saying then Amazon would get all of these, you know, not for very long. I think there's a limit, but say 2 minutes of in-home audio from 100 million people.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's theoretically possible. It's not. Remember, there are a lot of watchdogs out there now. There are a lot of paranoid people. And so it wouldn't go undetected for very long. Amazon doesn't, I can guarantee you, doesn't want all that information. You know, people would say, there's been a lot. I remember somebody telling me, oh, no. My husband and I were having a conversation about travel, not with the Echo on or anything. We're just having this conversation. All of a sudden, I got all these Amazon ads for suitcases. They're definitely listening. Yeah, no. The risks to their business are so high that I don't think they would do this, you know, just randomly. Now, I think that they can do it, and I think if law enforcement demanded it, they would. And I understand that it might have some value to them to know what people are talking about. But what are you going to do with 100 million two-minute snippets? I guess artificial intelligence could comb through it. The risk way outweighs the reward, in my opinion. I don't think we have to worry about that. But remember, your smartphone's capable of the same thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, your smartphone in your pocket is always listening for its trigger word as well. But even if it weren't, you have to trust that Apple's not turning on the microphone and Google's not turning on the microphone. You just have to trust that, I think. I mean, you're basically carrying around, as Archandra in our chat room says, a portable remote surveillance unit, GPS, always connected internet, camera, microphone, motion sensors. And Google has said that they can tell, for instance, actually, I'll talk about this when we come back because it's fascinating. They can tell who you are from all sorts of things, like your gait. Hey, Scott Wilkinsonian.
Leo, how are you? Hey, did you watch Major Crimes? What you were just talking about is a key plot point. A bad guy who pretended to be a witness sent the police department a picture on their phones with malware, and he was able to then monitor their conversation in the police office. It was very cool.
That could happen. I'm not saying that couldn't happen.
you know, it's fiction, but it was pretty creepy.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely doable. It's completely doable. Wow, look at that one, PC guy. That's a good story. Let me bookmark that. Ars Technica.
Oh, what's that?
I'll talk about it on the show, but there's been a spate of websites that embed cryptocurrency mining on your computer when you visit the website.
Really? So in case you have some, they snag it?
No. They just, if they have enough machines mining, they might be able to make some money.
Oh, I see. Wow. I don't even know anything about cryptocurrency. You know, how do you mine?
Don't get me started. I'll tell you.
It's not that I would ever go for it. I won't. But you know, everybody talks about mining it, and I kind of go, well, you mean like go out with a pick and axe? No,
it's a complicated explanation. I don't know if I can do it in 26 seconds.
No. That's
basically
fine.
In order, you know, you have to have some method of controlling a money supply, right? So, like, in theory, a dollar is tied to a certain amount of value, you know? We all kind of agree on what a dollar buys, right? Mm-hmm. Originally, it was gold, which really that was made up, or silver. But we agree about what a dollar buys. You need to somehow create cryptocurrencies with units that represent some sort of effort, so that there's a value stored in it. If you just kind of dumped it onto the market, I mean, it's like the Federal Reserve printing currency. That devalues the currency. So the guy who came up with Bitcoin, and all cryptocurrencies have adopted something like this since, came up with this way of, we'll have people with their computers solve difficult math problems. And every time, I know.
And that's
seriously
valuable?
Well, it isn't inherently valuable, but frankly, neither is a dollar. But we'll agree that there's a certain value to it. It gets harder over time. As more cryptocurrency is created, it gets harder and harder. And that is how we will create the currency between now and the year 2040. After the year 2040, all the currency will be created, and there won't be any additional currency created.
Hmm.
And so the whole idea of that is to slowly put it in circulation and try to maintain value, but that hasn't worked, obviously. Here we go. Here he is, Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, editor at the avsforum.com, joins us every week to talk home theater. Scott asked me with 30 seconds before the show came back to explain cryptocurrency mining. Were you satisfied by my 30-second thumbnail précis?
Yeah, I guess, more or less. I still don't get it. But
I don't get it. You don't need to get it.
I have no interest in you know, mining or getting any or whatever.
You don't
but
need to worry about it.
It's a bizarre concept. But then again, so is real currency, I guess, in a way.
Hey, you know, we live in a land of bizarre concepts. I mean, if you had thought 100 years ago we'd be able to watch video nearly as good as looking through a window.
Mm-hmm.
If you had explained DLP projection to me 10 years ago, I would have laughed you. I would have said, no, come on, there's fairies in there, right?
Millions of tiny mirrors wiggling around.
We're living in the age of miracles.
Indeed.
We have to suspend disbelief just to kind of go through our day-to-day motions.
Right.
So what's new in the land of miracles and TV?
Well, I thought I would mention, we know that the Super Bowl's coming up next week.
And oh, my
I
think gosh, we mentioned, really? Okay.
Yeah,
next week. Oh, my.
I mean, you know me, I'm going to be watching the Puppy Bowl, but
but this is the big buying. This week will be.
This is the big buying week for TVs, even more so than Black Friday, you know, because now we're almost to the point where the manufacturers are going to release their 2018 models. And so their 2017 models are going to go on big sale. And, of course, everybody wants to watch the Super Bowl on a big screen TV. So they do some promotions. So I contacted Sony and Samsung and Vizio and TCL and asked them, you know, what TVs are you putting on promotion for the Super Bowl? And most of them got back to me I haven't heard back from LG yet, but I hope to before next week. And I put them all in some lists on AVS Forum. So oh, nice. I encourage you to go check that out. It's the top of the homepage, TV deals for Super Bowl 52. And, you know, this is information mostly from the manufacturers themselves, and it's mostly basically going to the manufacturer online website, online sales.
Dealers right? might have additional.
They might very well have additional okay. discounts. And in fact, in one case, in the Vizio case, the prices that I list here are for what are called mass market retailers like Best Buy or Amazon. You can get even $100 more off, $100 less for the price at club stores like Sam's Club or Costco, if you remember. So,
is that a good place to buy a TV?
It is. I think Costco is a great place, actually, because they've got a really good return policy.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have any trouble at all buying a TV from Costco. Every time I go to Costco, you know, there are a ton of people in line with these big old boxes, TVs in their carts, you know, waiting to go.
LG, are they going to drop the price of their beautiful OLED TV?
I hope so. I haven't heard yet. I really wanted to include them in this list, and I will if they get back to me, you know, early part of the week.
Yeah.
But they haven't yet. So, and you'll see in this list, it's kind of interesting. Most products are in the 20-25% discount range.
Wow.
There's a Sony that's 31%. But some of the Vizios are not that great of a
discount. Because they're already low price, though.
They're already very low price, so it's not really that big a deal.
Would you now? You can't watch the Super Bowl in 4K, right?
Well, no, they're not broadcasting it.
No,
4K, no,
yeah.
No.
So these TVs. Is it foolish to say I want a 4K TV? Certainly
not at all. Not at all. In fact, I'm saying in these lists that I recommend that you buy a TV that's 4K. First of all, there's almost no 1080p TVs anymore, except small ones at the very bottom of the range.
I noticed all of the ones you recommend have HDR as well.
I recommend that you get an HDR set. Not that the Super Bowl is going to be broadcast in HDR. It's not. But if you're going to spend even a little money on a TV, you're going to keep it for a while. It's not going to just be for the Super Bowl, and then you're going to throw it away. And after the Super Bowl, you might want to watch movies in HDR.
Right.
And I really think, as I've said many times, that HDR is the most important, the biggest, most significant improvement in picture quality that's come along since we went to high definition more than 10 years ago. So I say, get a TV that does HDR, not that it'll help you with the Super Bowl, but that after that, you'll have streaming with HDR. You might have a 4K Blu-ray player with HDR.
And the Olympics, the Winter Olympics are coming
up.
They're going to be in 4K in some cases, right?
In some cases. I have to still do some research on exactly how people are going to get that in 4K.
So they're shooting the Super Bowl. They have 4K cameras, but that's just for special effects or zooming in. They're
exactly.
not really shooting the whole thing in 4K.
As far as I know, that's correct. And they're certainly not broadcasting it in 4K.
Right. And well, yes, but I'm even saying that you don't look for 4K even like down the road because they're not shooting it that way. The Olympics, however, are being shot in 4K HDR.
Yep. So that's correct.
Now you may have to get it streaming or something like that if you want to see it. You're not
correct.
Nobody broadcasts 4K.
No, nobody does. Streaming is the only way to get it, and so in terms of live, anyway. Well, yeah, there's no broadcasting.
I tell you, the Winter Olympics would look great in 4K HDR.
I agree.
You really would like to get it that way if you can.
Oh, and in fact, the Korean broadcasting system KBS is actually shooting some of it in 8K.
Of course they
are. Of course they are. And then NHK, Japanese Public Broadcasting System, is going to be shooting the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, also in 8K.
Yeah.
And we now at CES, we did see what will be the first commercially available 8K TV from Samsung. I always say I'm not a big proponent of 8K. I don't think it's going to be a significant improvement in picture quality over 4K. At the normal seating distances that one sits from a normal size TV.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, even giant commercial cinema screens are no more than 4K these days. Yeah. They aren't.
Yeah. I wonder if there'll be any 4K ads for the Super Bowl.
That'll be interesting, huh? Well, again, they won't be broadcast.
Yeah, nobody will see them that way. But maybe
nobody will see
YouTube.
Them that way.
There will be, NBC says, 50 hours of VR, virtual reality for the Winter Olympics. So get your Daydream or your headset ready. Vive or your Google Cardboard or your Samsung Gear VR, because I guess that'll be streamed. You'll have to watch that on the internet, but
it will.
They're going to do the opening and closing ceremonies that way, and that's
it. Could
cool.
be cool, but I still have not big on VR because the resolution's low. Yeah. I can easily see the pixel structure, and
it's kind of gimmicky. I mean,
it's
fun the first time you can look around while you're it's like you're there, but then
not a big deal.
It wears out its welcome.
I'm more interested in seeing 4K on my big screen TV.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be writing about that very shortly, how you can get
that. I have to think that we're getting – broadcast isn't going to have it.
Not for a while. ATSC 3.0 has the capability,
but they
and that
just
will roll
upgraded.
Out this year.
There's a lot of more equipment and stuff.
Exactly. The broadcasters are not going to upgrade anytime
soon. And isn't everything moving to the internet anyway? I think soon there'll be a 4K HDR Super Bowl, just not this year.
Maybe
the Puppy Bowl will be 4K.
I would love that.
Scott Wilkinson, he's editor at avsforum.com. Read that article if you want to get a TV this week. Check out the deals. avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So apparently, Mike Heiss is saying in the chat room that Comcast has upgraded their X1 set-top boxes to allow 4K. So cable could do it. If they're willing to devote some bandwidth to it.
That's the thing, isn't it?
You were able to watch, I remember last Olympics, the Summer Olympics 2 years ago, you could stream at 4K, but the bandwidth required was so intense those days that it really wasn't a very good experience. But I remember watching the opening ceremonies in 4K. It would just stutter a lot and stall.
Yeah. And who wants to watch that? I mean,
That takes away a lot of the fun.
It does.
I bet you this year it'll be easier to watch. People will have more bandwidth. They'll have more bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. Now that's interesting. If Mike says that,
Mike's your colleague. I should mention.
Yeah, he's my colleague. Yeah, yeah. We're buddies, and he's a very smart guy, and he says that Comcast will be broadcasting in 4K. I had a meeting with
Comcast.
Well,
they have the capability. He says they have the capability.
Well, I had a meeting at CES with the CTO of Comcast, and I asked him if they were going to be doing any 4K, and he said no.
For the Olympics?
Yes, for the Olympics. For the Olympics.
Interesting.
So I'm not, maybe they've changed their plan since then. I mean, it's been a whole 2 weeks. Which is 2 years in internet time. Anyway,
I'll leave it to you for another couple of minutes. I'm gonna go get a cup of coffee.
Please do. Mike Heiss, I'm not that smart. Yes, you are, Mike. You're a smart dude, and I always appreciate your view on things. Mike B asks, am I aware of the new VR feature in Plex? No, I'm not. I'll have to look that up. Again, I'm not interested in VR until the headsets get enough resolution so that I don't see the pixel structure and that it's all very smooth. I saw one VR demo at CES in the suite of a company called Parazzo, which is a Canadian company. They do Y-Gig, which is gigabit Wi-Fi. And they were showing a VR headset that was wireless to the computer. Which is a pretty big step, actually, because normally, you've got this headset, but it's connected by a wire to a computer or whatever's generating the content. So, if you spin around, you could get all tangled up and trip and fall over, and it would be not very good. So this was an example, a demonstration, a concept demo of wireless headset doing gigabit Wi-Fi and not being connected to the computer with a wire. And, that was pretty cool, but the graphics were still very crude, and I could see the pixel structure easily, and that's not interesting to me. So when they have micro LED that they can put, you know, 4K in each eye, and 4K in each eye, or equivalent of 8K, becomes important when the screen is, you know, half an inch from your eye. That's when it becomes important. And so when they have that, then I'll be interested in VR, much more interested in VR. The other thing that 8K is useful for is auto stereoscopic 3D. And I think I mentioned this last week that Stream TV Networks is the company. Their product is called Ultra D. And they showed at CES an 8K display, glasses-free 3D. And that looked really good. I was pretty impressed with that. So if and they announced a partnership with an OEM called BOE, which makes a lot of panels. So
sticking around for the top.
Happy to.
All right, thank you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. On to line one, and Brad in Wells, Nevada. Hey, Brad.
Hey.
Hey.
Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Adequate.
Adequate.
Hey, problem.
Yes, sir.
I did something stupid. I got caught.
Uh-oh.
I know better than to click on anything that says, oh, you need to update your flash. So the window came up. The first one I clicked on, no thanks. I should have just closed the window in the upper left-hand corner. There was an identical window right behind it.
Oh, sneaky.
Where it says no thanks. It didn't say no thanks. I clicked on it. It jumped down into my download
thing
in the dock.
Well, you didn't run it, though, did you?
No, I didn't run it. But
that's all right. Downloading it is only half the story. You got to then run it.
Well, here's the other problem. It's not showing up, and this is why I think it's bad, because it's not showing up in the download file.
Really?
There's nothing there. No record of it at all.
But you saw it downloading.
I saw it download. It jumped right down there.
That's interesting. Let's hope it's a. I think it's probably a failed download. They need you to do more than click a window in a browser to install. You're on Windows?
No, it's a Mac.
Oh, you're probably even doubly safe, because it's very unlikely that anything they're doing is going to affect a Mac. Almost all the exploits out there go after Windows. Not because they can't exploit a Mac. It's just there's so few Mac owners compared to Windows owners. And it's so much easier to go after Windows than it is Macintosh. That most, as far as I know, almost all the exploits I've ever seen go after Windows. So in order to...
What concerned me, though, was... Just,
oh,
it was,
I don't blame you.
It was deceptive on the front. And then in the rear end.
Yeah, they're sneaky as heck. Yeah. But maybe that wasn't even a download. Maybe that was, who knows? In other words,
okay.
What's happening is you're on a website, and websites have all sorts of ways of making things look like they're happening, including having the window swoop down towards the download area as if it's downloading. That can be a JavaScript effect that's coming from the website, not even happening. In order for a bad guy, there's really only two ways you can get bad stuff on your devices. And this includes mobile as well as desktops, on any computer. There's only two ways. The easiest, most effective way is a bad guy tricking you into running a program. And that's what they were trying to do. Oh, your flash, and I should put this in air quotes, your flash needs updating. It's not. And you were smart. You knew. You recognized it immediately. Oh, that's not... you got suspicious. But this is a very common trick bad guys use to get people to update. Or not. It looks like you're updating. It's not really updating, to install a program. So they have to get you to run a program. That's method one. And if you are, tricked into running that program, don't feel bad if you are. It's very persuasive in many cases. That could be by attaching a file they say is a spreadsheet to an email. Say they say it comes from the boss. Quick work on these numbers for me, and you're, oh my God, the boss is. Let me do this fast, and you double click it, and it, for some reason Excel doesn't launch because it wasn't an Excel spreadsheet; it was a program, And remember, a program running doesn't have to tell you anything. It doesn't have to display a window I'm installing or anything like that. On Windows, generally, we'll have to pop up the user access control dialog. Is it okay to install this? That's a feature that Microsoft put in some years ago that's pretty effective. And if you just say no, it'll block it. That leads us to the second method that's much more worrisome. And it's one of the reasons we are always saying, I say all the time, please update your system. Sometimes bad guys can get programs to run without your knowledge, without your permission. And when that happens, then you're in trouble because you're just going, by virtue of going to a website or seeing a pop-up, that's enough to get that program to install malware into your system without, again, without any intervention on your part, without any knowledge. But it does, in that case, it has to take advantage of a flaw in the operating system. The operating system is trying to protect you. It's saying you must explicitly run this program, and in the case of Windows, you must explicitly approve it under the UAC. And Apple does much the same thing. Even if you're an administrator, it says, I need an administrator password. You've seen this. To install. Those are ways the operating system is protecting you from accidentally installing something bad. It's giving you a second chance. But if there's a flaw in your system, and that's what we're – these are what we're – when we talk about exploits, this is what we're talking about. If there's a flaw in your system, bad guys can execute code without your knowledge. That's problematic. And that's why, you know, it's so important to do these patches. I'm going to say, based on what you just described, you're cool. You're safe, Brad. But good on you for, A, knowing, you know, most people, we see, you know, advisements to update Flash so often. Most people just go, yeah, yeah, of course you need to update. What's new? And click OK. And that means, OK, run this program. And then Windows will pop up the thing. OK, you need to, you approve this. And again, that little speed bump's not enough to make you think. You go, yeah, 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 just get it over with. And you've installed something bad. On Macintosh, same thing. Before you can install something that's going to do harm to your system, it'll pop up a dialogue saying, what's the administrative password? Even if you're running as administrator. That's a speed bump. That's to make you think. That's not there to get on your nerves. It's there to make you think. So think. And just because it looks like Flash doesn't mean it is. Just because it's an attachment from that looks like it's from the boss doesn't mean it is. They try all sorts of techniques. It's your bank. Oh, my gosh. Quickly, open this PDF and verify this transaction. We think it's fraudulent. We want to stop it. Otherwise, $10,000 will be taken from your account. Yikes. They do that because, you know, the more scared you are, the more likely you'll go along with it without thinking. These are old con. All of this is old con tricks. You know, I mean, the con game just has migrated to the internet. So good that you noticed that, Brad. I think you're all right. I don't think anything bad happened. You know, unless there's a flaw in your system, and Apple's very good about keeping everything protected. Same thing with Microsoft these days. Unless there's a flaw in your system that you haven't patched, you're all right. That's why this Spectre meltdown thing's a big deal. But it still, interestingly, requires a bad guy be able to run a program on your system to snoop on your memory. Still have to have bad malicious software. So those are the only two ways you can get malware in your system. You agree to run it, or they sneakily get by your operating system's protections and run it. Ed in Claremore, Oklahoma. Hello, Ed.
Leo, it's so good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Great. May I first say that I'm very impressed with how nice, polite, and patient you are with everybody you talk to, no matter how simple or basic the question is.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate
it. It's really a pleasure listening to your show.
I started doing this many years ago because I felt like people weren't getting the help and support they needed from the industry. We really have to, as users, we're going to have to stick together. Ed, I'm going to have to ask you one more thing. Can you stick around? Because we've got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I don't mind taking time out for praise. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hang in there, Ed. We'll be right back in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you want to join the fun, 8888 Ask Leo. And don't forget the website, techguylabs.com. La. And while I'm taking a break, Scott Wilkinson is going to work.
Woohoo!
So, hey, everybody. We've been having an interesting talk in the chat room One of the things is ATSC 3.0, which is the next broadcast standard. Somebody, was it Y guy, Wisconsin guy, said, so we're not going to see ATSC 3.0 for 10 years, right? Well, no, it's going to be deployed probably this year, possibly next at the latest. But I am almost certain that we will see TVs with ATSC 3.0 tuners in them at CES 2019. Just like those same TVs will have HDMI 2.1 in them as well. But somebody else in the chat room made a very good comment, which was, yeah, but when will TV stations switch over to ATSC 3.0? They're now at ATSC 1.0. And Mike Heiss made a good point that ATSC 3.0 is not mandatory. ATSC 1.0 was. And I guess you're right. I didn't really know this, but I'll take your word for it, Mike, that 4K is optional. They don't even have to do that. Now, switching from ATSC 1.0 to 3.0 will involve some new hardware at the station, at the broadcast end. But there's a lot of hardware that can still be used. So it's not going to be that expensive. What is going to be expensive, at least in terms of time and certainly in terms of infrastructure, is 4K. So getting 4K to go out over ATSC 3.0, that's going to take a lot longer. And Y-Guy, who knows? It could take 10 years. It's depends on whether or not the broadcasters are going to invest in that infrastructure to do that. Emily DeStrange also asked about, you know, well, when are cable companies going to do 4K? And Comcast already has apparently set up their X1 Xfinity box to receive 4K. Dish, I believe, has a 4K channel on their satellite service. They also are now doing high dynamic range, HDR, in HLG format. So it is coming. But as I wrote to Emily, cable companies, I think, are going to be resistant or reluctant to do a lot of 4K because it's going to take so much more bandwidth. And the amount of bandwidth that they can do one 4K channel in, they can do multiple high def channels in. And that's going to make them more money because they can sell ads into all of those rather than just one 4K stream. Now, Comcast, you know, maybe they'll do one just to show that they can do it. They've got the premium service. We should buy our service because we've got 4K and nobody else does. Okay, well, maybe they'll do it that way. But I think that rollout's going to be pretty slow. That's my opinion anyway. Ari is asking, is the signal backward compatible for older TVs? You mean ATSC 3.0, I assume. And I believe it is. I'm not 100% sure about that. Mike, in the chat room, maybe you can tell me for sure. I don't know for sure. KC8RLU1 asks, will converter boxes be offered to those who don't have ATSC 3.0 tuners? I'm sure they will. They won't be converter boxes. They'll be tuner boxes. Basically, when we transitioned from SD to HD, there were quite a few tuner boxes that were available. There were also converter boxes that converted the digital signal back to analog for legacy TV. But there were also tuners. I remember I had a Panasonic outboard separate box tuner that let me tune in HD stations. And I am sure that there will be ATSC 3.0 external boxes as well. On the other hand, TV makers are going to put those tuners in their TVs sooner than later. So those external tuner boxes may not have a long life. You know, they'll be around for current HD and 4K TVs that don't have those tuners in them and people want to use them. They can get ATSC 3.0. They'll be able to buy a tuner box. It'll have an HDMI output. They'll be able to send it to their TV and get ATSC 3.0. But as those TVs get replaced with TVs from 2019 and beyond, they'll have tuners built in. So I don't think it'll last that long. Let's see. Mike B says Altice also. Okay. I'm going to have to do some more research on this for sure. And Mike B sent me a link about Altice. So thank you. I'll check that out for sure. User 9740 says, I'll bet it depends on the station and the content. Yeah, of course. News may not, but sports should. Yeah, exactly. Sports, I think, is one good application of 4K. High frame rate as well. And that's another thing ATSC allows is high frame rate. I forget what it is exactly. Mike, maybe you can tell me about that. Why? WIGGS Wigs. Will ATSC 3.0 make TV in rural areas even more terrible? Well, no. It'll probably be the way it is. I don't know that certainly rural areas won't have ATSC 3 transmitters. Well, they won't be the first to get them anyway. They'll first be in urban areas and then they'll roll out. And somebody else earlier, I can't remember who, asked about ATSC and IP access, internet access. And that is one of the features of ATSC 3.0. Now, exactly how that's going to happen, I don't know. The question, as I recall, was something about getting IP access over the air. And I tend to think that's not the way it will be. I tend to think that an ATSC 3.0 tuner, whether it's inside the TV or a separate box, will have an internet connection. It'll have Wi-Fi in it or an Ethernet port or probably both. And it will access the internet from your home network. And it'll be integrated with the broadcast signal somehow. I don't quite know how, but I doubt that it's over-the-air internet access. Because for one thing, that's one way only. You can't send stuff out over OTA, over the air broadcasting. You can over satellite if you have the right kind of satellite dish and so on, but that's like HughesNet, and that's really only for rural areas again. So that's that story. Use, what is your comment about the old KLH Model 18 FM tuner? Well, if you like FM radio, sure. I never tried the KLH, but KLH is a good brand, good audiophile brand, so it probably would work really well. Beatmaster says internet access probably only to the TV channel for additional content. Yeah, exactly.
All right, Scotty, thank you.
My pleasure. See you next week.
Take care. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, the cloud, the voice, the Super Bowl, nice high-resolution TVs. 8888 Ask Leo is my number, 888-827-5536. You can also go to the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. Don't worry. I'm not going to charge you. There's no sign-up necessary. All the stuff we talk about is linked there. There's even audio and video of previous shows there. Now, I just started talking to Ed in Claremore, Oklahoma, and I had to cut you off, and I'm sorry, Ed, but we're back. What can I do for you today?
That's no problem. I appreciate it. Well, you've spoken in the past, and I've listened to you talk about two-factor authentication, and either I set it up or it's set up for me. I like to use it as often as possible.
Good man.
But it just seems something I've noticed. I have a Mac and an iPhone and iPad and all that. And when I'm going to and it just seems to be Apple sites, such as iCloud, and I log in, and it puts up the two-factor authentication boxes, and then it sends back the passcode to the same device.
I know. Isn't that dumb?
I do not understand how that can possibly be considered two-factor authentication.
I completely agree to you. So here's the deal. Two-factor, and just... I'm so glad you use it. I was just telling my wife the other day to use it. And I tell everybody to use it. Oh, no, it wasn't my wife. It was my wife uses it. My daughter to use it. People don't because it seems a little more inconvenient, although I think it's gotten better and better. My daughter was worried because she got a notice from Google. Somebody logged in to her Google account and she didn't recognize. And I said, well, it's probably okay, but change your password and turn on two-factor. And she said, well, how do I – do I have to put an app on my phone? I said, no. Google now allows you, if you have the Google app on your phone, to use that. It'll send you a message saying, you're attempting to log in. Is that okay? And you say approve. But you raise such a good point, Ed, because the theory of two-factor is it's something you know, your password, and then either something you have, as in your phone, or something you are, as in biometrics, your fingerprint, your face ID, your iris scan. And the idea of combining two of those makes it more than twice as secure as a password. It means a bad guy to attack you, even if he knew your password, would then have to have your phone. But you raise the excellent point, well, wait a minute, because I'm getting the two-factor in the same device I'm logging in on. And you're right that it would be better if it were on another device. Even Google does this. And the reason is it's still you need the password and the physical possession of that object. So it's still two factors in the sense that it's something you know, your password, and something you have. In this case, the same computer you're logging in on. But the presumption is, well, if the person knows the password and is actually on Ed's computer, it's probably Ed. Right? It'd be nice if it were on a second device, but I think that that's the theory. Yeah. And one of the reasons Apple does that is they don't want you to have – it does it on all your devices, by the way. You've probably noticed that. If you have an iPad and an iPhone, that same four-digit number shows up everywhere.
Right. Right. I've seen that.
Yeah. And I think the theory is, you know, it's still a second factor. If somebody steals your password, they would then still need your computer for that to work. But I agree with you. I have the same. When I see that Facebook does that too sometimes, when I see that, I say, well, wait a minute, dude. That's not as. Yeah, I'm the bad guy sitting at Ed's computer. Thanks for giving me that code.
Can I toss this into it?
Sure.
As I was sitting here thinking about it, I can relate it to also the other thing happening is when you first log into something, it'll toss up a little map.
Yes.
And so somebody's trying to log in, do you allow or disallow? And we're up near Tulsa, about 200 miles away from Dallas, and it's typically showing kind of, if I remember right, centered on the northeast side of Dallas.
Okay, and that's because the device you're using, in this case your computer, doesn't have GPS in it. So it's using your internet signal. And Apple, like Google and like many other companies, they've created a database matching Wi-Fi access points to locations. Originally, they used a company called Skyhook to do this. And then eventually Apple and Google both started driving. When they were driving around cars, said, well, we might as well collect this data too. And they triangulate. They say, well, the strongest signal is in Ed's house. The other signal is from there and the other signal is from there. And they could triangulate it that way. If they're not doing that, then they have to resort to the system that they're using that's giving you the bad result, which is your IP address. And geolocation by IP address is notoriously poor. In this case, you're probably seeing your internet service provider's location as opposed to
yours. Well, it makes me feel a little uncomfortable because that's not where I am.
Yeah, you don't have GPS built in, and it's apparently not getting a Wi-Fi signal or enough to geolocate you. Or you don't where you are in Claremore, they never mapped, most likely. And is your internet service provider in where were you getting, Dallas?
Right.
That's pretty far away.
The funny thing is that might tie in with another thing in that when I go shopping and I might get on Sam's Club or Walmart, and it'll say, okay, here it is at your store, and it's Plano, Texas.
Yes. Yeah, so that's it's doing that by IP address. So there's another database maintained by another company that says these IP addresses belong to this location. But that's a very inaccurate system, and probably what they're getting, I'm almost going to bet you is your internet service provider's headquarters is in Plano. And
probably,
and that's the best they can do. They say, well, that IP address belongs to this internet service provider. This is where it's located. That's as close as we're going to get.
Okay. Can I toss in something about Kaspersky real quick?
You certainly may. You heard me talking about the questions about it. Yeah.
I had, and I see your point about antiviruses, but by listening to another radio.
See, there's your mistake right there.
Well,
don't listen to those other people. Okay, go ahead. All right.
And then all the news came about that they were tied in with the Russian government.
Yeah.
And I start, so I'm going to take it off. Get rid of it.
Yes.
Well, the only thing I could take it off, find to take it off with was a removal of the program from Kaspersky.
Yes. And you say, how safe is that? That, unfortunately, is the case with most antiviruses. And this is to protect you, right? You don't want a virus to be able to uninstall the antivirus. So they make them hard to uninstall. And Norton is the same thing. You have to go to Norton to get an antivirus removal tool. And that's just a extra security. You got to have to kind of sort of trust it. But you're right. Raise a good point.
I'm getting rid of Kaspersky, so I don't trust
them. I don't trust them.
Removal tool.
You kind of have to use their tool, unfortunately. It's the only way you can fully remove it, and just hope that that works.
All right.
Hope that works. Are you on which version of Windows are you on?
Oh, I'm on Mac.
Oh, you're on Mac. You really don't need an antivirus on Macintosh.
Or whatever.
Yeah, you're safe. Take it off. You don't need anything on Macintosh. Even Windows machines, you could make an argument that Windows machines should have protection. They do. They come with a Windows Defender from Microsoft, and that's a perfectly adequate antivirus without any of the issues that other antiviruses have. Macintosh, Apple has put some very interesting security stuff on there, and there's so many fewer viruses, I think you don't have to worry. You're safe as houses. Hey, I'm so glad you're listening. And thanks for the kind words. I appreciated it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take more of your calls in just a bit. 8888-ASK-LEO. And don't forget, as I said, the website, free and available to all, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. Gary, Rancho Cucamonga, California. Thanks for hanging on, Gary.
Leo, good afternoon. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I am looking for an Android application recommendation.
Okey-doke.
You've talked about, in the past, web portals, having a log on before you actually get to the internet, such as like Starbucks and places like this.
Yeah.
Is there something to simplify that process where I can put the password in once and launch that app, and then it'll just enter the password?
Oh, what a good idea. Not that I know. Well, let me think about that a little bit. By the way, this is something new in Oreo 8.1, which most Android phones will be getting sometime in the next year or so. It will let you know before you join a Wi-Fi access point how good it is, whether it's got a strong or fast signal, medium or weak. That's nice. But now, are you saying that these are websites that you have entered the password in for in the past? Or are they Starbucks where you have to accept the terms of service and all that part?
Yeah, I think with Starbucks, you have to accept the terms and click OK. But there's other places like my work, for example, where you've got to enter a password and then, click OK.
Got it.
And everything goes fine. You're on the internet later.
So any password vault will do the latter. That's just remembering passwords. And in fact, I prefer using a password vault to any mechanism offered by a browser or by the phone itself. Apple phones, for instance, will offer to remember passwords like that. And admittedly, they're storing it in the Apple keychain. It's safe there. But I like the idea of using a third party, what we call a password vault. And the idea is this stores all your passwords. And on Android, these password vaults can fill in passwords when they see a password dialog. It can't guarantee it would do it for every password dialog, but it does a pretty good job of spotting them. And in the cases where it doesn't, you can pull down the notifications pane and say, fill this in, and it will fill it in. The one I use is called LastPass. You probably heard me talk about it. I recommend everybody use it. The reason is, otherwise, your temptation is to use the same password everywhere, a variation of it. Your kid's birthday and your mother's maiden name and your dog's first dog's name all combined together in various ways, because it's hard to remember passwords. And so using the same password or a variant of the same password everywhere is just easier. The problem with that is it's much less secure, because if somebody gets your password on one platform, they can go over. And it turns out, it's sad to say, only about 10% of people out there are using password managers, and I really want to get that number up a little bit higher. The advantage of something like LastPass is you can have it generate a password for you, a strong one, one you would never remember in a million years. You know, 20 characters of complete gibberish, store it for you and fill it in for you when you get to that form on the phone. It'll also do the same on your desktop as well. If you pay, I think it's a couple bucks a month. But they have a free version. You could just use a free version on your phone. But if you want to use it on multiple platforms, there's a paid version. It's not very expensive. And that way, when you enter the password once on your desktop, let's say, at work, it'll remember it, and then it'll put it in on your phone whenever you see that form again. So I think that's a really, really good choice. LastPass.com. If you don't want them, there's others like 1Password, the number 1, and Password, also very good. There are open source free solutions like KeePass, but I find LastPass, having used it for years, we actually use it as a corporate enterprise password system as well. I find it very reliable. I highly recommend it. Okay?
Very nice. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. I appreciate the call. Is there any excuse I can – last two calls I've had the opportunity to promote two-factor authentication and a password vault. And, man, if everybody used those, it would put these bad guys kind of out of business, at least in terms of cracking websites and passwords and so forth. They'd have to go elsewhere. All those leaked passwords would be useless if you have two-factor. Somebody can know your password and still not be able to get in. And if you use a password vault, you want to use a good one. I'll tell you, the only risk with a password vault is if somebody gets that vault and can crack into it, that everything's there, right? That's you've lost the keys to the kingdom. It's one of the reasons I like LastPass is they use very good, very strong encryption on the password vault, and only you know the password. They don't have access to it. So only you can unlock that vault. Even if someone would crack into the password, the site where they store the passwords, into LastPass's servers, and got your password vault, they wouldn't be able to get into it. You know, so use a good password. You only have to remember one from now on, the password that unlocks the vault. And typically when you unlock it, let's say on a phone, it stays unlocked. On most Android phones, you can use your fingerprint ID to unlock the vault, which is great. Every 30 days, they ask you to re-authenticate, give the password again. By the way, you should also use two-factor on it, right? Yeah, absolutely. Have two-factor authentication on your LastPass. I actually do it with a physical authentication device, a thing called a YubiKey. So somebody would have to have that physical device to unlock my password vault. That makes me feel a lot better. On the iPhone 10, it uses Face ID to unlock it. That's great. I feel so much more secure that way. And as somebody who is presumably the target of hackers, you know, they'd love to hack into my stuff. I feel like I need to take extra precautions, but I feel pretty darn safe. LastPass.com or one, and just to give you a choice, 1Password.com. Those are my two favorite. Let's go to line 3. Penny in Long Beach. Hi, Penny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's okay. That's okay. Come over to the phone. I kept you on hold a long time. You have stuff to do. I don't blame you.
Oh, I can't believe I'm talking to you. I listen all the time.
Oh,
I can't
say
I'm absorbing a lot of it.
It's bouncing right off, huh? No.
Yeah.
You're absorbing more than you know. You're absorbing more than you know.
Yeah. I impress my husband when I tell him about things I've learned. So.
You see? You'll be a geek before you know it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's been a number of years, but we both have just laptops. I mean, we don't have that much use with, you know, computers, but we had an old tower, and I have this, my husband just wants to get, I mean, it's just been in storage, and I just want to get rid of it. You know, the first of the year, you get rid of all your junk.
Yeah.
And I've just kept it around because I have this sneaking suspicion there's something on there I have.
That's a good idea. And, you could keep just the hard drive and give away the tower. You'd probably be all right.
Okay. I'm just trying to I actually just kind of want to get rid of the whole thing. And I was going to take it somewhere and have them, you know, put everything on an external drive.
There you go.
I was trying. But what I was trying to do, I was trying to do it myself. You know, I'm kind of a do-it-yourselfer. And I actually had, we had gotten rid of the monitors a long time ago, but I had gotten this cable to hook up my
nice.
Computer to the TV to display it. So I was trying to boot it. I thought, well, I can maybe, you know, do that. And but it wouldn't boot. It's on XP, and it wouldn't boot. So I don't know if I took it somewhere, if they'd be able to do anything.
Well, hold on a second. I got to take a break, but I think I can help you. We'll try anyway. After the break, more of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what happens when you turn it on? You got it hooked up to the TV. You got a keyboard on it?
Yeah, I have the keyboard, and actually, I should have done it today before I called you, but I'd done it a while back.
Sometimes computers won't boot if there's no keyboard. And you also want to make sure that the screen you're using it can work with, but it probably can. Was it a HDMI cable from the tower to the TV?
Yeah, I believe that's what it is.
Okay.
I just got it at Radio Shack. I was actually just trying to display. I was watching my niece's softball game on the computer, and I wanted to put it on my TV screen,
nice.
So I did that. But all of our equipment's pretty old. I mean, even my computer is like a 2011, you know, my laptop.
So the first thing is we want to make sure that you actually can, you know, it may be booting, but you just can't see it because the cable's wrong or something. It sounds like the cable worked with your laptop.
Uh-huh.
And you're able to watch the game. The question is, how is it going to work with the desktop? And you don't need an adapter to plug it in. It plugs in just fine.
Yeah, I just went right to my TV. There's an input in the back.
Sometimes older computers, I mean, something that old might not have had the appropriate output. It sounds like it did. So the same cable that worked with your laptop worked with is the same cable that works at least physically with your TV.
Yeah, it showed the booting process. It just
oh, it did
to the desk.
Oh, that's good. So you were able to see something on the screen. You saw the blah 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 blah, but just never got all the way. Got it.
Yeah, and
what was the last thing you saw? Did you see starting Windows?
Yeah. Gosh. Oh, gosh. I should have written this all down. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
It was like that. Kind of blue green.
You got the blue screen. Yeah, that means it's starting up.
Yeah,
but you never got the login.
Loop.
It got in a loop.
Yeah, it would go in a loop. It never got to the desktop looking thing. You know, it just went in a loop with that blue screen, old looking stuff. You know.
So there are a couple of possibilities.
Okay.
How long has it been since you booted it up?
Oh gosh, it's been a couple. I should have done it. Try to do it again before I.
Well, is it years? Is it months? Is it no? I mean
it's been a couple months.
And since you used it though, how long? Has it been?
Since we used it, it's been years.
Years.
Actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there are a few things that can go wrong, and any shop would be able to get by most of these things. So there's a battery in there that keeps the time of day, but also keeps a record of what kinds of stuff is in there that may have died. The shop could easily fix that. It may be that, believe it or not, hard drives, if they're just sitting for a long time, something gets something called stiction, where the head kind of adheres to the surface of the drive. And the shop guy, man, don't get mad at him if he does this, might actually whack it, give it a good whack with a screwdriver or a hammer, a rubber hammer, just to get it unstuck. Sometimes that's all it takes. He may, if neither of those things work, he may have to take it out of the computer and see if he can look at the drive. It may not boot just because, you know, something may be damaged to the operating system, but the data may be all there. So in that case, he can open up the tower, take out the drive, connect it to another computer that's working and see if he can see what's on the drive. So there's lots of things he can do that, you know, if you had all the gear you could do, but, and it may even be that the TV is fine until it gets to a certain point, and then the screen is too refresh rate is too fast, or the resolution is wrong, and it can't. Does it go black, or does it just stay on that blue?
It just stays. It just keeps going in a loop until I, you know, turn it off. It just keeps going through the same.
It's like it's rebooting. Footage. It's rebooting each time.
Yeah, but it never goes. It never completely reboots. It just does the same thing.
And so
over
it's
and
trying
over.
Really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you should bring it into a shop, and they may well be able to get it. And they, at very least, could take it out of the case and put it in an enclosure and give it to you, and then you could get rid of the computer and just keep the hard drive with, you know, just in case you needed that data. It's probably not something you could do yourself. If I were there, I could, you know, with the right tools. But I think bring it to the shop. Yeah. Thank you. Got to run. It's Johnny Jet time. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jet. He's breathing the fresh air of beautiful Manhattan Beach, California. Home base. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing?
Is it freezing there? You're wearing a shearling, sheepskin shearling jacket.
Actually, it was cold yesterday, but it's warm today. But my basement where I am is cold. So I just threw this on and
put some wine down there.
It's nice and toasty.
I'll send you some wine for there.
Yeah. So, well, I was actually supposed to be coming to you from New York City where I would have been wearing something like this.
Now, wait a minute, Johnny. Lately, you've been kind of canceling these trips right and left. I don't know about this. Have you lost the itch?
I lost my mojo. I almost feel like. No, I'm kidding. We were supposed to fly to New York on Wednesday, and we went to the doctor on Tuesday for Jack to get his booster flu shot. When you're a kid, you need to get a booster flu shot. He's under two.
You want to this year, too. It's a bad flu.
And the doctor's like, you're taking him on a plane right now? You know, the chances of catching the flu when you fly is 1,000 times greater. I don't know if that's true.
The more people you expose yourself to, the more likely one of them's going to have the flu. I think that's fair. Then you're going to take him to the biggest city in America, and you know.
Yeah. So she put the fear of God in us, and I canceled their trips. And then the next day, right before I got on the plane, I wasn't feeling well. So I was like, and I had to cancel some big appointments. So it kind of hurt.
John.
I took a big hit. But, actually, I learned a couple tips. So one of the tips is when you do have to cancel a flight, like I did, and especially if you know way far in advance, don't just go outright and cancel it because the airlines will charge you the change fee, which is normally $200, depending on the airline, unless you fly Southwest, which
then they just give you a credit, right? Though they don't give you your cash back.
They don't charge a change fee, which is amazing about Southwest. Yeah, problem is Southwest doesn't fly everywhere I need to fly. I go to Toronto a lot or New York or wherever. And also I like to get upgraded and Southwest doesn't do that. But anyway, what you do is you wait till the last minute and see if the flight has been delayed or if they had to change the schedule. And if they do, then you call them up. Even if they change the schedule by just 5 minutes, you can usually get your money back in full without the change fee.
Hey, it's not my fault. You changed the schedule. You ruined my life.
They normally tell you it has to be an hour, but I've done it when it's after 5 minutes. Say, hey, that messes up my schedule. And they're like, no problem. And
if you don't cancel before the door closes, though, then you owe the whole thing, right?
Yes. So that's my next point. You really have to make sure that you time it right. You know, track
you almost
it all
need
online.
To be at the airport.
No. You just monitor it online. And, you know, I've canceled so many tickets in the last few months that I've become a master at it. And sometimes I get lucky, sometimes I don't. But if I didn't, you know, monitor it, I definitely would have been out a lot more money than I am now.
Is there any disadvantage to canceling close to the flight leaving? I mean, do they make that? Are you less likely to get a refund?
No.
No.
As long as you cancel before the flight takes off.
Okay.
Or supposed to depart.
So
it's
like playing chicken with your ticket, but hey, save you money.
Yeah, a lot of times these flights are delayed, and if they are delayed, you can get your money back.
This is good. I'm going to remember this. I have to cancel a ticket for my daughter. I'm going to wait until the last possible. So, and where do you monitor? Like, who's up to date on whether the door's closed? I mean, that's kind of.
I track it with the airline's tracker, and also I use TripIt, and I will look sometimes at Google, and your Echo will track flights. You can put in, say, blank, you know, tell her to track flight AA flight.
And the minute you see it's delayed. You should call the airline and say, oh,
you
my flight's delayed.
Sometimes, even when your flight's delayed, sometimes they can actually update it and leave on time. So that's another that's a whole nother story.
Then what happens? So you got
to
get.
Well, sometimes you get a notification saying your flight's going to be delayed by a few hours, and then you get to the airport, and they're like, "Oh, you know what? We actually left on time."
That makes me nuts.
We found new equipment.
That makes me nuts. They shouldn't, because then I missed my flight, and I was just paying attention.
Ugh, so I hate that. Chances are,
so even if you're delayed, you should show up at the gate at the original flight time, just in case.
It depends on it all depends on the routing. So one time I was in Hawaii and that happened. I got a notification flight was going to be delayed like 5 hours, but I looked at the incoming aircraft and I saw that it was coming. That they don't have a lot of flights, but this particular airline to Hawaii. So I knew that they weren't just going to go to the shed and grab another aircraft. It wasn't like one of their bases. So
this is high end stuff. You got to really be a Johnny Jet to pull some of this stuff off. Just consider that.
All right. Anyway, let's get to my website and app.
Yes.
So my website's long, so I actually emailed it to you and tweeted it and copied you on it.
All right.
Because, you know, I thought this – someone asked me a question recently, like, what's open and what's not in the Caribbean? They want to go on a vacation.
Yes.
And I know you just came back from there, and I can't remember every island that was hit hard.
Oy.
And I don't have the time to research it, but this great travel publication is mostly for trade, travelweekly.com. They did an excellent job creating a guide that's just been updated with maps and everything and tells you exactly which islands, which hotels are open, the percentage, if their infrastructure has been hit.
Yeah, we were in the British Virgin Islands, which were so badly hit. And and you see it's all red on their map still. Yes. A lot of power outages. It was a wonderful place to visit. People were very friendly and welcoming, and I highly encourage people to go. But a lot of the places that you'd expect to visit and the restaurants and hotels, they're not running.
Correct. So actually, don't look at the map. Scroll down, and you can see, because they tell you like
point by point.
Like, and they say for British Virgin Islands, they tell you which hotels are going to open when.
Oh, that's nice.
They'll tell you the attractions and restaurants, and they have every island from, you know, Dominica to the BVI.
Yeah, it's still beautiful. In fact, I was kind of glad we went. I feel like we were helping them out by putting some much-needed tourist dollars into their economy. But also, it wasn't crowded.
Yeah, that's...
You know?
this is the time to go to these places. That's when you get the best deals. There's not a lot of people there. So anytime there's a natural disaster or whatever kind of disaster is usually a good time to go right after, unless it's just been completely toppled.
Yeah, yeah.
But like Puerto Rico, they're open for business and they want people to know it right now.
They put out a press release saying that. Yeah. My son spent another week in Puerto Rico. I had a great time. And you know, you don't have to feel guilty going to a place like this. These places rely on tourist dollars. So not going hurts them.
With that, for sure.
And you can have a great time because I tell you, everybody was very happy to see us. Very warm. All right, good. This is a... You go actually get this on Johnny Jet's website. What's open and closed?
Yeah, I have it on the homepage, but
yeah,
it's
easy
just
to find. Or just look at
Travel Weekly is a long website, but they do a great job.
Yeah.
So now my app, I actually meant to mention this last week because that's when it was really hot. You've probably heard of it. Google's Arts and Culture app. I'm not sure if you're going to like this or not.
I did it.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Okay. So they have a feature of like, you know, can you recognize your... Is there a portrait of your face in a museum around the world?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have a face painting, face to painting matching.
It's not perfect.
Kind of a gimmick.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick almost.
And it's not legal, oddly enough, in Illinois or Texas because they have
rules. I know it's only in the U.S.
And even in Illinois and Texas, it's not legal because of privacy rules.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
That is. But I did it and, you know, my match was ridiculous. They give me a few different matches.
Ridiculous. Yeah. You want to see mine? Well, you can't because it's the radio, but trust me.
There it is.
I don't look like that guy.
Actually, you kind of do.
Oh, shut up, Johnny. No, I do. I look just like him, unfortunately. That's when you realize, oh, man, I'm getting old. So is it on your Instagram?
Not my Instagram. I think I...
You tweeted it?
I think I put it on Facebook. I can't remember.
All right. I'll have to look for it.
Mine was embarrassing.
It's free. It's a little hard to find. It's the Google Arts and Culture app, which is a free app.
Yep.
And just on the front page, scroll down and do the face match thing.
Yep.
Except offer prohibited in Texas and Illinois.
And outside the U.S.
And outside the U.S.
You won't find it outside the U.S.
JohnnyJet.com. You won't find him outside the U.S. at least for a little bit longer. He's at home. But you will find him at JohnnyJet.com and on the Twitter and Instagram, too. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to find your picture. That's really good advice because I have Abby booked a ticket to Mexico and then needs to cancel because it doesn't fit with her class schedule. And I was just going to call him and cancel. She got the travel guard, but I think travel guard is only if like you get sick or you know something serious happens.
Well,
right?
You got to do Allianz. That's my big sponsor.
I'm an Allianz guy.
Travel insurance.
My Jane, who's listening, my travel agent, Jane at travelstore.com. Always gets me Allianz insurance.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I mean, Allianz, I mean, that's why.
I didn't on this one because I didn't, my son booked it. I didn't book it. And he bought the United Travel Guard or whatever it was for $20.
Gotcha. Yeah, the airlines affiliate some of the different ones.
Yeah.
You know, it's on my website. I wrote a post about this app. It's my app of the week. And actually, I tweeted it just now. So if you click it, then you can see my match.
All right. I got to see Johnny's match here. Let's see. Let's go to the Twitter. Let's go to the Twitter. See Johnny's match. I'm all the way at the bottom. Find your face.
There.
You do not look like. No, that's not you. That's terrible. That's not
that's
even.
What I was trying to say.
That's not even close. It's not even. You're not even pointed the same way. Is that the only one you got on here?
No, well, there were more. I didn't put the other ones in.
That's awful.
It's plus, I was working at my computer. This is 1 o'clock in the morning when I took this photo.
Yeah, you don't look so good. But you don't look like that guy. But you're saying I do look like that guy?
No, I'm joking. Of course
you
don't.
Oh, my heart. You're breaking my heart. Thing is, I was thinking about it, and the guy probably is my age, right?
No, he's
I pretend that I'm younger. But back then, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, back then, let's say you're 50. Back then, if you're 50, you're really 60.
He's
now, if you're 50, you're really
only 44, right? Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, Royal College of Art and Music, Sir George Grove. He looks like he has gout.
my dad has gout, which is no fun.
Oh, no fun at all. Who's that DJ? That's our Michael Cozio, our musical director, spinning the discs today. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dan on the line from New Jersey. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, it's getting to tax time soon. Sorry to bring that up. And I am looking for a program or a feature somehow to help me to sort or filter out my spreadsheets. About this time of the year, I go and I try to find all the deductions that I can.
Yeah.
I go to my bank account. I download that bank account to a spreadsheet. And then what I like to do is I have to categorize all of those items.
Oh, God.
Because, you know, different things get written off differently. You know, I am a photographer, so maybe all the cameras are 100% off.
You got the infamous Schedule C. Oh, boy.
You know, or maybe if it's I have a home office, so the gas or electric could be a portion of that could be deducted.
Yeah.
But what I want to do is to create some kind of a.
You'd like it to go through your spreadsheets automatically?
Well, I would create almost like an if this then that.
Oh yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
If it says the name of the gas company, then move that number over to column B.
Okay.
And if it says, you know, Shell Oil, move that to column C, you know. And then I push, and what I would do is preset all of these filters.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, this year, and then every year in the future, I can load all the numbers into the program and hit the button, and it would sort all of the expenses into their.
It's so much more likely that this would be something you would do with the spreadsheet's own tools than with the tax app.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've looked.
Yeah.
I can do.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things you can do. There's a couple of things you can do. If you feel handy, if you're good at spreadsheets, this is trivial. Spreadsheets is exactly the kind of thing they can do with lookup tables. And you can categorize it. You could actually, if you wanted to spend some time, have the spreadsheet kind of do a lot of the manual stuff and just give you a number at the bottom of the page saying this, this, and this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is something, if you feel handy, you could do in a spreadsheet. There's another way I would like you to do it starting this year, and that's get rid of the dang spreadsheets and start using something like Intuit's Mint program. And I've recommended this before. Right. This is an online program. You don't have to do anything except connect it to your accounts, your bank accounts, your credit card, whatever accounts. And in almost every case, this is secure, by the way. Intuit is, well, first of all, you can trust them, and they're not even storing your credentials themselves. They usually use a third-party service that already knows your relationship, often the same service. In the past, anyway, it was Yodlee, which is a service the banks used for the same purposes. They don't use Yodlee anymore. They may do. I'm not sure how they do it. They may do it themselves, but you can trust them. The other reason you might want to do this is Intuit owns, I think it's, is it TurboTax? They own TurboTax, I think. And I'm sure, I haven't tried this, that they have direct import from Mint into TurboTax. So Mint does all the categorization for you. It's kind of like the old, remember, you know, Quicken, the old program where you do this instead of the spreadsheets, you put your checking account into Quicken and you'd categorize it. If you're, you know, a serious business, my business, for instance, we use QuickBooks and we have category numbers for everything. And you know, but we also have a bookkeeper who's full time who does this.
She
puts everything in categories. And then at the end of the year, the reports are exactly what the accountant wants to do the taxes. Mint will do a lot of that automatically for you.
Now,
so
I spoke to the people at Mint, though. I actually phoned them.
Did you?
They said they weren't able to help me the way I wanted it, at least.
Okay. And well, so, if you get really picky about how you want it, then you're going to do it custom, and you're going to write your own software. In effect, this is called programming, even though it's a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I know.
But that's the only way to get it exactly as you want it. I mean, that's really the truth.
And what spreadsheet would any program like Excel?
Excel is the king. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you're asking is pretty simple. Excel has very powerful programming capabilities. All the Microsoft Office apps do. They're amazing. And there's pretty much nothing you can't do in Excel. The other reason you might want to try Excel is it's very likely that there are people who've already written something close.
Right, right.
If you look for Excel templates for taxes, you'll be amazed at all the stuff that's out there.
That's what I would search for, Excel templates.
Yeah.
Let's say.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So if you don't want to buy something, I mean, Google Docs has a pretty capable spreadsheet capability. People on Mac, of course, have the option of using Apple's Numbers, which is free.
Right. I've tried that.
Are you on a Mac or a PC?
A Mac.
So Numbers, you know, you have Numbers. It'll probably do the same thing. It's just, it's not going to have as many.
Close.
Yeah.
Close, you know?
It's actually, I'll sweeten it a little bit. This is a fun project. Like you said,
it's not that difficult, really. It just has to be done.
It has to be done. And it might be worth it to, before you start writing code, really think about what you want and sketch it, plan it a little bit more before you actually do it. The reason I suggest this is true for all programming is if you leap into it, you will make some mistakes. You will make some choices early on that might have been avoided. Coders have a nice euphemism. They call it refactoring, when you have to throw out everything you've written and start over. Almost always that happens, and almost always the refactored code is better than the original. But let's try to avoid that by thinking out, planning it out, maybe even sketching out what you want this spreadsheet to do. But what you're describing is exactly what spreadsheets were designed to do. A lot of people think spreadsheets are only for numbers, but they absolutely can do the database-y kind of thing you're talking about, which is say, this is photography equipment. That goes in this category. Yeah, I mean, and that's not so hard to do. I think
it should be able to do it automatically. Yeah. So maybe I'll even give the people at Mint another call. You never know who you spoke to.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is no call. Mint's free. Just go to mint.com, attach your accounts, and just see what you get, what kind of categorization you get.
That's true.
I don't know. I've never I've never tried it. I've used TurboTax for years, and I should mention TurboTax is a sponsor of the show, but I've used TurboTax for years, and Mint, I would expect, since it's the same company, would have a way to say, give me TurboTax-style reports. But whether it will, yeah, you're right. It depends who you get on the phone. Yeah, just look at it and see. And you might still just like having having it there anyway. Somebody, is that your kid?
No, it's, I'm out of the field walking my dog, and there are some kids.
There are some very, that's a piercing
yeah,
scream.
Exactly.
Somebody's suggesting, and I'm not familiar with this, but somebody in the chat room is saying simpleplanning.com.
Okay, that's what I like. Chat room.
Chat room is amazing. Simpleplanning.com. This is from a lady in Montana. And she says that this will do some of what you want to do.
Okay.
So financial planners, calculators, and more. Oh, that's interesting.
That's
so
good.
This actually is kind of like somebody took a spreadsheet. Oh, they are. They're easy-to-use Excel-based spreadsheets. Duh. Now, you have to buy it, but they have a lot of a simple accounting software, planners, tax calculator. Yeah, this might be a good start, and you can certainly see how they coded it. Might be a good insight into where you could go next. That's cool. Thank you, Lady in Montana. That's her handle. I'm not making that up. Thank you for the suggestion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That was a good one, Lady in Montana. Thank you. You use it. That is a really nice... We'll put that simpleplanning.net. We'll put that in the show notes. Actually, it says .com, but when I went there, it came out .net. Simpleplanning.com, personal finance for everyone. That looks like a great solution. Is it expensive? Oh, $40. Nothing for the whole set of stuff. Yeah, if you like spreadsheets, and obviously he liked spreadsheets. Frankly, I mean, anything you want to do, you can do in a spreadsheet. It's a simple thing to do. Lady in Montana says, Leo, I love it. Wait a minute, let me. Leo, I love it. Montana, the first state in the nation to preserve net neutrality. I love that. Hey, you know, this might be a good time to talk about TurboTax. They are a sponsor of our show. Hello. And they have a new feature, which I really, really like, called TurboTax Live. So I've used TurboTax for years until I had a business that was big enough that we needed to use, you know, accounting firms and all that stuff. TurboTax was how I did it. I still use TurboTax for my mom. So I just started doing her taxes last year. What's nice is I can just, you know, load it again. It's all online, and it'll pre-fill all the stuff I did last year. Makes it very simple and fast. Huge TurboTax fan. But this new feature solves a need, because especially with the new rules, and I know they don't go into effect until next year, but there is still some tax planning you might want to do this year for next year. You might want some advice, and TurboTax Live gives you that advice. And for a very affordable price, you get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or an EA, you know, an enrolled agent. These are specially trained people, right on your screen. You can quickly connect to a tax expert via, and I notice they say, one-way video. Don't worry, you don't have to put on, you can wear your jammies. You see them, they don't see you. One-way video, as often as you need for answer. Get that? As often as you, it's not one call, it's the whole, through the whole process. As often as you need for answers and advice on your taxes. You can have the expert review your return before you file, make any necessary changes, and it's all backed with a 100% accuracy guarantee. So you get the convenience and ease of TurboTax, but the confidence that you've got an expert looking at your taxes and helping you. And it's at a great price. File with complete confidence. Right now, contact a TurboTax Live expert at TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. So if you want to go that extra step, you know, a lot of people, just TurboTax is fine. But if you want to get that extra step, you know, you're saying, well, I feel like I need some advice. I need somebody to tell me what I'm doing wrong, or maybe help me for next year plan for the new tax. Real CPAs, real confidence. She looks so nice. I actually just, I'm going to get some advice just because she looks like she knows what she's doing. That's Crystal. She's a CPA. This is so, so cool. Look how affordable. TurboTaxLive.com/tech guy. By the way, you start for free and you pay only when you file, which I really, really like. And I, you know, I used to actually buy this software shrink wrapped, right? Now that it's all online, it's great because you don't have to update it. It's automatically got all the current stuff in it. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, password security systems, speech interpreters, augmented reality, 8888-ASK-LEO. It's a bunch of nerdy stuff. Anything, if it's the kind of thing you'd go, I better get a geek to help me with this, I'm your geek. I'm your geek. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Website is techguylabs.com. I don't mean to imply you can only listen in the U.S. and Canada. We have listeners all over the world thanks to this thing called the internet. It's amazing. And you can even make an internet phone call to that number. It's toll-free. Shouldn't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. Joe has done that in Santa Ana, California. Hello, Joe. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I could be better.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry to hear that.
I think you already answered it when I was listening, that you don't really need a software antivirus except for Windows Defender. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, and this has changed now. And for a long time, we said you have to have an antivirus.
Right.
But in my opinion, and again, this is opinion, but I'll tell you why. And I also will bolster my opinion by the fact that my opinion is shared by a great many of security experts as well. And the reason is there's multifold. First of all, no antivirus is perfect. In fact, they're far from perfect. So in a way, an antivirus gives you a sense of security that you shouldn't be getting, frankly. With the WannaCry malware, this nasty malware that spread about a year ago, 1 in 3 mm-hmm. antiviruses detected it. That means 2 out of 3 times you got infected and you were saying, well, but I'm protected. No, you're not. And that's really become a problem, you know, in the last few years because viruses spread so quickly. In the old days, when you got a virus via a floppy disk, having an antivirus that was updated weekly was probably all right. It took a while for a virus to get to you. Nowadays, we're talking about flaws that, in fact, they even call them zero-day flaws, that are discovered and exploited in less than 24 hours. Your antivirus can't keep up. So that's problem number one. It's a false sense of security because it's not perfect. The bigger problem in my mind is many antiviruses actually expose you to more flaws. Part of that is because, well, any program you put on your computer exposes you to more flaws. If that program is not perfect, and no program is perfect, if it has any flaws, a bad guy can exploit it. So that's true of all programs. In fact, lately, my advice is don't install anything you're not sure you want. We used to, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, you get your PC. The first thing you do is you download a bunch of stuff from all over the place. I can't wait to try it. That's probably not a good habit. We should install things we know we need from responsible, reliable companies and be very slow to run programs from anywhere else. But the antivirus is even worse than your average program because in order for antiviruses to work, many of them hook down deep into the system. And even Microsoft has had problems with this. For instance, when they were putting out patches for this most recent Intel chip flaw, these patches caused blue screen of death in many systems that had antiviruses because the antiviruses we're in the habit, a habit Microsoft's discouraged but not prevented, of accessing kernel memory way down deep in the operating system. And if that happened after the patch, bam, your system went down. So Microsoft told all the antivirus companies, first, you got to fix that. And B, once you fix it, you need to set a key in the registry saying you fixed it, or we're not even going to try to install the fix for this malware. That shows you there's a problem, right? Antiviruses are doing things they shouldn't be doing. And I can refer you. All you have to do is a Google search for antivirus exploits. All the big antivirus companies have been bit. You said you use Malwarebytes. That's one of them. That they've become, you know, a vector for infections. So you're putting something on there that has dubious or a limited value and might even open you up to more infections. And the third reason is if you have a recent version of Windows, Windows 8, 8, 1, or 10, you already have an antivirus. You have Microsoft's Defender. Not admittedly the most aggressive or best antivirus out there, but more than adequate to at least protect you against the obvious stuff. And then really the most important rule is keep your system up to date. Make sure you apply all those critical updates and be careful about what else you install. Really be slow. Even if you get a pop-up that says, oh, you got an out-of-date version of Flash, don't click the link in the pop-up. Go to Adobe's site and download it there just to make sure you're getting the right one. We should all be very leery about what we install on our system, because every program you install has the potential for being either malware or a conduit for malware.
I see.
Have I persuaded you?
Oh, yes, definitely. But my question is, should I get rid of what I have on there and just use Windows Defender?
I do. I haven't used an antivirus for years.
Okay.
For years.
Well, I listened to you for a long time, and I switched to graveyard shift because I worked Saturday night, so I didn't get to listen to you much. I just started listening to you again.
Well, thank you. Welcome back. And you know we do offer a podcast, so you can listen at your leisure. That's okay. TechGuyLabs.com. You got a life. You're not going to go around listening to geek shows.
Well, then I need it.
I well, unfortunately, we do, don't we? It's unfortunate. But and I have to say that what I just said is opinion. I gave you my reasons for it. You will hear from people who say, oh, I wouldn't dare go on the internet without Malwarebytes running. It's not the end of the world to have it running. Those are just my reasons for not doing it.
Right. Well, it was causing my system to freeze up this morning. And
I didn't add this. You're right. This is the fourth thing. And I hear from so many people frequently, the calls I get, the first thing I say is, well, do you have security software running? Because it can also affect how your computer performs.
Right. And so I'm getting rid of that today.
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I ask you about another software that I also have two antivirus? Can I ask you about this other one too?
Sure, sure.
It's ESET.
ESET was a sponsor for a long time. This is back in the day when I did recommend antiviruses. It's very lightweight. It's I still consider it probably the best antivirus out there. But again, for the same reasons I spoke of earlier, I don't think you need it. Now, I have not heard of any security issues with ESET. But nevertheless, there's always this risk. They're hooked into the kernel. It could be another pathway for bad guys. So
I see.
Even our beloved ESET.
Okay. Well, so just to make sure, you said I can get by with just Windows Defender.
Yeah, because you really have three programs on there. You don't need all three. One's fine.
Right.
One's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, and just be careful. I mean, this doesn't get – that's the real point. It doesn't let you off the hook. You got to update. You got to be careful. Don't install stuff you don't know you have to have, that kind of thing. That's the most important thing you can do. We got another hour to go with the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte here. Keep your calls coming. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I love technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. On line three, Steve in Maryland. Hello, Steve.
Hi there, Leo.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right, I got a problem here.
Yes, sir.
What happened is we had a machine, Dell i660. 8 gigs memory that the family used, and now I would like to use it exclusively. Is there a way I can make my user account the administrator account, and how do I do that?
You need access, administrator access. Do you have administrator access?
I have administrator access. I just don't know how to do it without, remember, I don't want to lose my pictures and videos and all my documents.
Ah, so you have an account that is a limited user that you've been using, and you'd like to make it administrator.
Right.
Yeah, you should just be able to go in and change it.
Oh, how do I do that?
Well, let me look at my Windows 10, Windows 8, Windows 7. 10.
Windows 10, yeah.
All right, let me just look at it. I'm pretty sure you can just go into the user's control panel, user and accounts control panel, and check a box that says make me administrator. But, you know, I better look just to make sure they haven't changed that in some way and eliminated
it. Yeah, I'm not very Windows 10 knowledgeable.
to be honest, while I use it a lot all the time, I'm not a big fan, so sometimes it takes me a little while to remember. You do have to be logged in to do that, though, as the administrator. So go into your administrator account.
Right.
Not your regular account, but your administrator account, whatever it is. And then go to the user's control panel or user's settings. And you should be able to modify. I think there's this, you know, Windows, thank you for booting so darn quickly. I think there's a, let's just do it real quickly here, and I can give you the exact change user account control settings. I think that's probably it. No, that's UAC. I don't know why I'm messing around on this. Accounts, and then your info, sign-in options, family, and other people. Other people, yeah, that's interesting. They, you know, they've changed this. This is always a frustration for me. They have, unfortunately, two control panels now in Windows with Windows 10. They have a very simple control panel, and then they have a much more elaborate control panel. And the one you need, I think, is the more elaborate control panel.
Okay.
And so I'm just trying to find a quick and easy way to get into it for you. Modify user account. Yeah, do it from the old control panel. You know, there's a really silly way of doing it where you type, what was it, control space user passwords 2, something like that. Right-click on the Start menu and select Control Panel. Thank you. Chat room is reminding me. Windows X will pop up a special hidden magical menu that has all sorts of nice features, and you can launch the Control Panel from there, the old-school Control Panel. Let's just do that real quickly.
Okay.
And then once you're in there, no, it looks like they've moved that away, too. Darn you, Windows! Is it? All right, I'm going to give you a link in our chat room because it's just easier to do that, or rather on our website. It's from the chat room, windowscentral.com, how to change user account type in Windows 10. It is more complicated than it used to be. It is. So you're not asking a silly question. Windows key I, accounts, family, and other people. Oh, there it is. Yeah, I see it now. All right. Windows I, other people. Manage family settings online. No. Oh, this cracks me up. You should see under family and other people, other accounts. But it looks like, I can't tell if this is a newer version of Windows 10. This is the fall creators update. I don't know if they've hidden it. But I will give you... Wow. I'm looking at what this website says, and it doesn't look like what my computer looks like, but I will give you the link on this website, techguylabs.com. And if not, you can always do this, which is really crazy, but type control space user passwords 2, and that will give you the old, very powerful. I don't see it here. No, maybe that's, do I have, not have enough accounts on here? Yeah, I'm looking in settings. Look at, they've changed it. My Windows expert. Yeah, no, this is it.
Well, just go to settings.
Go to settings. Mm-hmm. That's the new control panel. Yeah. Yeah, he's saying, yeah, I know what you're saying, but see, I don't see any other accounts here.
If you had other accounts, it would be in there.
Maybe I just lacking other accounts. Okay, so we're going to do what this article says in Windows Central, and I'll cross my fingers. I need to maybe create some more accounts so that I can see all the issues. Alex Gumpel, thank you. He's my Windows expert, who, strangely enough, collects old Macintosh computers. Isn't that odd? But he's a Windows expert. Charmaine, Costa Mesa, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Charmaine. How are you?
Well, I'm still here at an antique age. And I'm trying to do modern things here, and I'm talking about the Echo.
Ah, yes, the Amazon Echo.
Yay.
My favorite device. Do you have one?
Yes, I do. Nice. And what I want to know is, can I plug the Echo into a surge suppressor rather than into an electrical outlet?
You absolutely can.
You can?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Because otherwise I'm stuck with it. Don't want it.
I know. You know, it's funny. My mom, who's 85, asked the same exact question. I'm
84.
There you go. You see, it must be something. It's your generation. I said, well, I don't know, Mom. Let's try. And I gave her a power strip, a surge suppressor, plugged it in. It worked just fine.
Oh, that is great news. And I have one more question to ask you.
Certainly.
And that is, does that Echo thing hear everything that goes on in the house?
A lot of people worried about that. No.
It doesn't.
All it's doing, it has inside of it a very small, dumb chip and a little bit of memory. You know, there's four words you can use to trigger it, right? There's Echo, there's computer, there's Amazon, and there's Alexa. That's the default. Everybody uses that lady's name.
Yes.
But those are the only words it can use. It has in its memory patterns for those four words. If it sees that pattern, then it turns on the microphone and sends everything back to Amazon for interpretation, but only then.
Say those four words again.
Well, it's in your Alexa. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that out loud. It's in your Echo app on your phone. Echo, computer, which I don't use either of those because I want to be able to talk about it, and I say the word computer a lot.
Yeah.
Amazon, you could say, hey, Amazon.
Yeah.
If you didn't say that word a lot. And then, of course, you know her name, A-L. Yeah. I can't say it out loud. I don't want to trigger people's... Echoes, Alexa. Those are the only four it will use, and that's because it's such a limited device. So it's only listening in the sense of that little machine, that tube there, is always processing the sound, but it's not sending it anywhere, and it's just looking for a pattern that matches those one of those four words. And if it finds that, then, and only then, it turns on the microphone and says, okay, send it up to Amazon. She wants us to do something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It doesn't hear everything. It just is listening for those four words. Actually, whatever you said the trigger word should be, it only listens for that one.
Okay. Are dots the same way?
Dots are the same. All the echoes work exactly the same way.
Oh,
so you don't have to worry. They're not monitoring you.
Okay. Thanks a whole bunch.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you. Thank you.
And you have a good day.
You too. Thanks, Charmaine. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Amazon Echo, computer, and the A word. So maybe it's just I don't have another.
So I do.
And you have the fall update?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can change account type, and that's just a checkbox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but you're right. I just don't have more than one account on here. Can I add just an account without a Microsoft?
Yeah.
So it says give me your Microsoft account or phone number, which is ridiculous.
Just go into settings.
Add, edit, or remove other people. Oops. Okay, add someone else. And says it now it says email or phone. Oh, I don't have this person's sign-in information. Clever.
Yeah.
Clever. So I'll just make it.
No, that's creating a.
That's making an account. Add a user without. No. So it's two clicks in. And then I'm going to say this is the sample account. Make it secure, sample, next. Your password hint can't contain your password. Well, that's obvious. You know. Okay. And then, so I'm creating an account. A hint is required. Same as the name, dummy. Okay. Now, there we go. Okay. So that was just because I guess I didn't have other accounts. So now, so let's do that again just so, jeez. The problem is I'm gun-shy because they change stuff so often. So I'm going to go to users, add, edit, or remove other people. And then we're going to see add. So you see other people. Here's, and you'll see all the accounts, including your your limited user account. It will be right there. And then you see check account, change account type. So it's currently standard user, but you can say, no, make that an administrator. But you have to do that from an administrator account. I'm going to leave it standard user because it's got no good password on it. Okay, so that's that would have worked had I had another account on there. I just didn't have another account. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to have to remember that old TV show Branded where they tear the guy's stripes off of him and tear up his uniform and make him throw him out of the fort. Was that Branded? I think it was. They got to do that for me, the tech guy. I could barely figure out how to change a user account type. And my only excuse is every time I get a Windows update, you know, just recently, I think most of us got the Fall Creators Update, a.k.a. 1709. Get ready. The spring update's coming out in a few months. Everything seems to move around. One of the things that's happening is, and I didn't know this, but Alex has explained this to me now. There have been, ever since Windows 8, and it's always been, in my mind, a problem, two distinct control panels for Windows. There's the easy-to-use, friendly, big-button control panel that's, for most things, the thing you see. And then there's the old-school Windows 7 and earlier type control panel. It's got fine print and lots of explanation. It's harder to use. It's also more powerful. And that is harder to get to, and they kind of hide it. What I didn't know is over time, gradually, they've been moving functions out of the old, what maybe not out of the old control panel, but moving functions from the old control panel into the newer one. And it's clear that at some point, thank goodness, Microsoft plans to just have one control panel on Windows. That would be a nice thing. Here we are, three versions later, and we still have all this, you know, confusion. Yeah, they also have two browsers, Internet Explorer and Edge. It's just they have many of the Windows Office apps. There's a Windows Store version, and there's a desktop version. It's just very confusing. So that's my only excuse. I should know better, and I verified that it does work. If you want to upgrade or downgrade a user, if you have a standard user you want to turn into an administrator or an administrator you want to turn into a standard user, it's simple. You're gonna go into the new fancy big button control panel, and you're gonna go into the users, and you're gonna change a user's capabilities, and you can do it all there. You can upgrade or downgrade users, but you must be logged in as an administrator to do that. We used to. One of my recommendations has changed. I have to say, I used to for all operating systems say don't run as an administrator. Because a virus or a malicious program that gets on your system with the permissions you have, theoretically. And so if you're running as a full all-power administrator, that means the bad guy will also be running as the full all-powers administrator. And that's not a good thing. So for a long time, the standard security advice was run as a standard user. And then if you need to, you can escalate to an administrator to do things like install software. Both Macintosh and Windows have over time kind of made that obsolete because even standard users on both those operating systems are limited. And at least in the case of the Macintosh, it's actually great. You have to enter an administrator password, even if you are an administrator, if you want to do something potentially dangerous. You actually have to type the password in. On Windows, I wish they did that. They don't. But they at least pop up that window that says, you are about to do something potentially dangerous. Are you sure? And that's why in both cases, it's important to pay attention. I think it's better to ask for the password because, frankly, we're all so used to going, okay, and just clicking all those boxes away. I'm in a hurry. I want to install this malware. Come on. Yeah. And so it's a little better, I think, a little more of a speed bump to say, you got to enter the password. I kind of like Apple's way of doing that. In both cases, though, I think these warnings are, you know, good enough that you probably can run as administrator because it can be inconvenient to be an administrator, too. I understand that. Richard, Spring Hill, Florida is next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Welcome.
I've got a question for you. Well, probably more than one, but I've got a Windows 7 Pro laptop. I purchased it. Well, it's a refurb unit.
Okay.
Anyway, I want to find out if I can operate that using thumb drives. And what I'm thinking is, you know, like...
You mean boot off of it, run the software on the thumb drive, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You sure can. It'll be slow.
Well, the thing I'm thinking is like, okay, like I've got this operating system on there. I've got, you know, I might have... couple different programs on there. I want to have a backup of them, and every time I finish, I'll do a backup. And then if something gets in there in the meantime, like say I'm out
smart
surfing and something gets in there
smart
and screws everything up, I can just reload from my thumb drive.
Sure. You absolutely can do that. And if you, in fact, that's not an uncommon use. For Linux, sometimes people will create a secure, there's a Linux operating system, for instance, called Cubes, that is highly secure. They'll run that off a USB thumb drive, and when they want to do something that they need to be secure, say banking, they restart the computer, and they tell the computer, boot from the USB drive. And then they're running Cubes, they're not running Windows, they can do it, whatever they need to do completely securely, reboot after that, and nothing's changed on their Windows drive, but they were able to operate securely. So that's the extreme case of what you want to do. The only, you know, suggestion is your older computer probably, does it have USB 3 ports?
It's got USB ports, yes. And
the USB 3. So the old USB, USB 2, is a lot slower. USB 3.1 or 3 with either the blue USB Type-A USB connectors or a newer Type-C connector, which won't be on that machine. Those will operate much
older ones.
Yeah, but is it blue?
I don't know.
Yeah, if it's blue, then that's faster. And if you get a USB 3 thumb drive that supports that, it'll be actually usable. If you just do it with a USB 2 thumb drive on the USB 2 port, it's going to be sluggish. But since all you want to do is restore it, yeah. In fact, what I would suggest, here's what I would really do in this case. Is I would get a USB external drive, not just a thumb drive, but a full-size drive, be a little faster. And you can use a Windows 7 backup command. There's actually an imager built into all versions of Windows. On Windows 10, they call it the Windows 7 imager. But you can use that to make an image of your existing system on that USB thumb drive or that USB external drive. And then if something goes wrong, instead of using the USB drive as your boot system, you can restore, completely overwrite the internal drive with the known good installation and get back to the way it was. And that's actually a very good way to operate. That's using a disk image system. There are third-party disk imagers, but Windows comes with one built in.
Is there a place where you'd recommend go to... Well, learn more about it online, right?
Yeah.
Read it and so on.
Yeah. If you look for, actually, I read a recent article that was quite good on it. I'm not sure where I read it, but if you Google Windows 7 disk imaging in Windows 10 or something like that, they'll show you how to get to it. You just hit Windows key and image, and you should be able to get right to it. And it looks like it's a backup command, but it's a little bit better than backup. It's making an exact copy of your internal drive that can be blasted back onto it should something go wrong on the internal drive, whether it's malware or just, you know, bad software.
Every once in a while I get this thing pop up and says, contact the FBI.
When you get that, that is cause for alert, cause for warning.
So far I've been able to just
Yeah.
Shut it down. And
A lot of times these are just Windows. These are web browser pop-ups. They're harmless. But if you really got malware on there, it would be nice to have a image that you could restore that would overwrite the malware and get you back up and running fast. That's the real use for disk imaging. Google disk imaging in Windows 10, and that's still a part of Windows 10, although Microsoft's made noise about taking it out. And they do call it the Windows 7 imaging tool, which is kind of silly. But it is very handy, and I've used it, and it's fast and it's effective, and you already have it, so why not? The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me just see. They were last I heard they said they were going to take it out of the Fall Creators Update, but then they didn't. Maybe they're going to do it in the spring. Let me just make sure. Image backup. That didn't work. There we go. Windows 7 backup and restore, it's called, I guess. Is that right? No, it's doing web searches. I hope they didn't take this out. Backup settings. Let's see. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's still there. So you type Windows key backup. Go to this, you know, modern control panel, and you'll see, looking for an older backup, go to backup and restore parentheses Windows 7. And this gives you the old school control panel, and you can actually do create a system image. See over on the left. And you can do it on a hard disk. You could do it on an external drive. You do it on DVD, you can do it on a network location. Choose on a hard disk, and then what you'll want to do is you'll want to put in, let's just put in a USB key just to show you. This is not formatted for Windows. I don't know what's going to happen here. Let's see. USB drive. Okay, good. And now I should, let's refresh that. On a hard disk, doesn't see it. What's going on? Come on. No, I don't care about that. I should see the E drive, shouldn't I? Well, it's probably this because it's not formatted for Windows. But if this, a system image is a copy of the drives required for Windows to run, it can also include additional drives. A system image could be used to restore your computer if your hard drive or computer ever stops working. And so this is the way to do it. And it's pretty effective. Oh, yeah, I had to format it. That's it. Yeah, let's format it. Make it 65 kilobytes. Ugh. Not going to mess with it. It's formatted for PSD. Yeah, and BSD, rather. PC BSD. So just real quickly, I'll do it one more time. Windows key, backup, settings. Looking for an older backup, go to backup and restore Windows 7. Create a system image. You can do it on a hard disk, which would also include a USB drive. System repair disk. Needs a DVD burner. Never mind. Well, you can tell it really is antiquated. Freak out. It's time for the Giz Whiz. This could practically be his theme song. Did you know Niles Rogers and the Chic? This was a...
Oh, I have their album.
I know. This is a great classic disco.
But I never met them.
That's Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him our Gizwiz because he's a gizmo wizard. He brings us fun gadgets and gizmos every week, besides writing for Mad Magazine every month for the last years.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. A long time. Hello, Dickie D. No flu in your neighborhood, huh?
No, Dennis had it. He's pretty much over it.
Good.
And,
good.
You know, he wears gloves when he hands me a drink, and every time he goes by, I spray him with Lysol.
Yeah, that's good thinking. You heard Johnny Jett decided not to travel with his 1-year-old because he was really afraid of getting the flu.
Yeah,
it's
bad.
Flu season this year.
It is. Absolutely.
What have you brought us, my friend?
Oh, so the New York Boat Show is in town, and I went on Wednesday, the opening day, and I saw this nice little car, looked like a little Jeep, and I thought, oh, it's a nice little car to tow a boat. And then I got closer and realized it is a boat.
It's a boat car.
It's a boat car. Well, it doesn't have the most inspired name. When I saw the sign water car, I figured they could have done better than
it's a
that.
Little
but then
literal.
When I found out about it, it's a bunch of guys. They decided back in, I think it was 1999, they were going to build the fastest amphibious car and go for the Guinness World Record, which they got. It's 60 miles an hour on the water.
It looks like a Jeep.
It looks exactly like a Jeep.
But then you drive in the water.
Drive straight on in. I said to the guy, how long is the conversion time? And he said, 15 seconds. You drive into the water. You hit a little button that raises the front two wheels hydraulically. And it switches from tires to a jet drive in the back.
Ooh, so it's not even just like a propeller engine. This is
no propeller. No, this
fancy.
Is even better than that.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about hitting debris or anything. It's wildly expensive. So the company builds them one at a time, and the options are unlimited, assuming that your budget is, because the medium price is $155,000.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I see Jay Leno has one, though. So that's,
absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's a 300-horsepower Honda.
Wow. So it's a fast, regular, everyday production car.
Exactly.
But it's amphibious.
It's amphibious. Wow. And 44 miles an hour, you know, they got the record at 60 miles an hour with a souped-up engine. But the standard engine comes – 44 miles an hour is pretty fast on the water.
Oh, it goes that fast on the water?
Yes, it's 44 miles an hour on the water.
How many knots is that? That's fast.
It's
like 50 knots or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Jeez Louise.
And I asked the guy, I said, have you been out in anything rough? And he said, well, you don't want to go in waves bigger than about 2 feet.
Oh, all right.
So, but that's okay. I mean, it really moves. If you go to their website, it's watercar.com. They have a video of it running on the water. And the thing gets up and really planes.
Well, you're a boater. I mean, they should let you drive this.
Well, I can only drive it on the water because I'm terrible on the road.
That's a good point. This is really, it's wrong for you, but for the wrong reasons.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, and it's also very funny because they show several models that they sell to small fire departments.
I saw the little fire truck one.
Yes, yeah. Because it's great for fires on the water because you have an unlimited supply of water. The jet, instead of powering the boat, the jet motor will just shoot the water through the hose.
Wow.
And so it converts to a fireboat, too.
It's a fire rescue vehicle. That's kind
of
amazing.
Exactly. It's pretty neat. Pretty neat.
Watercar.com. If you've got $150,000, you're burning a hole in your pocket.
Exactly.
And if you don't, why don't you go to gizwiz.biz? You can learn more about this and all of the great gadgets and gizmos Dick shows us on this show and on World News Now and all the other places he appears. Gizwiz.biz. While you're there, click the link that says, what the heck is that? That's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for figuring out either what this close-up of a gadget or gizmo is or coming up with the best crazy answer. Autographed copies of Mad Magazine await all who attend. Also, Dick's fine podcast, gizwiz.tv. Have you done both the CES episodes?
We did both. Each of us have a couple of gadgets left over, so we're going to do one more.
Fun. Yeah. You and so Chad Johnson, our good friend, OMG Chad, gizwiz.tv for that podcast. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. See you next week.
Always a pleasure. One more call, I think, before I have to head out of here, and that should be Jay in Lompoc, California. Hi, Jay.
Oh, hi, Leo. Love what you're doing on the Twit Network. I'm a regular viewer of Ham Nation.
Bless you.
And I've got a problem that, and you had a previous caller, the only time I've ever heard it mentioned, about this pop-up while you're browsing that says you're infected,
yep.
You got to call this number.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anywhere how to get rid of it.
Well, there's two possibilities. I mean, most of the time that pop-up goes along with a web page. So it's been a modified web page. However, if somebody can get on your system and install something, then you'll see it even when you're not on the internet, when you're not running a browser. Is that your situation?
No, and I'm not really sure that it happens on any other browser, because I use Bing and I use Chrome sometimes, and it happens, I think, mostly on Edge.
It's on Edge. So it's possible they installed a plugin for Edge that's popping it up, but it's also possible that the website you're visiting has been hacked.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a little JavaScript that pops up this pop-up. You're smart. And by the way, everybody who's listening knows exactly what you're talking about because we've all seen it. You're smart enough to know, don't call that number, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the key, and that's the message for everybody is, even if you see this, it's fake. And they have a whole rigmarole they'll give you. In fact, nowadays they even call you directly. They don't even pop up something. I get calls all the time. Hi, this is Windows calling. First of all, it's Microsoft, not Windows, and they don't call you. We can see from the traffic coming out of your computer, you have a problem. And then they'll walk you through this whole thing. It's just completely nefarious. They get you to launch the event logger.
Well, when I try to get rid of this thing, I used to just shut down the computer and then...
Oh, you don't need to do that. If you close the browser and it goes away, then it is from the website or the browser.
Well, it won't let me close the browser at all.
Yeah, so JavaScript can do that.
I have to go to the task manager and close it there.
And that works?
Yeah, and then I go down to the lower left and bring up the different programs I have and launch Edge from that column.
Here's what you'll want to do is, make sure you don't have any additional Edge extensions installed. And then, there's an Edge extension that you can install that's safe from the Microsoft Extension Store called uBlock Origin that will block all of these from now on. It's a very nice, it's an ad blocker, but it also blocks all malicious scripts, including that one. uBlock Origin. Once you install that on Edge, you should never see this pop up ever again. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.